Our scripture reading today is from Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verses 1 through 11. You can follow along on page 614 of the Old Testament or on the screens. The words of the teacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, says the teacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What do people gain from all the toil at which they toil under the sun? A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun goes down and hurries to the place where it rises. The wind blows to the south and goes around to the north. Round and round goes the wind, and on its circuits the wind returns. All streams run to the sea, but the sea is not full. To the place where the streams flow, there they continue to flow. All things are wearisome, more than one can express. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, or the ear filled with hearing. What has been is what will be, and what has been done is what will be done. There is nothing new under the sun. Is there a thing of which it is said, see, this is new? It has already been in the ages before us. The people of long ago are not remembered, nor will there be any remembrance of people yet to come by those who come after them. Thus ends our reading.
So I'm about to take you on a crazy journey. And you can perhaps blame Kelly when this is all over. Because Pastor Kelly and I were talking a couple of months ago about what we might want to do this summer, and we couldn't come up with anything nearly as fun as last summer when we took you down the yellow brick road. And she said, I've got this Bible study on Ecclesiastes. So she found it, and we looked at it, and I said, not much here. It was 4 units. I said, it barely touches the surface. So that led me to do a little search, and I found a pastor who did a 20-week service preaching on Ecclesiastes, and I thought that was way too much. So I cut it down, but not by much. So you're going to get a summer full of Ecclesiastes. So from Memorial Day to Labor Day, you're going to get 13 weeks that I'm going to take you through the book of Ecclesiastes and see what is in there. How many of you have ever read anything out of Ecclesiastes? How many of you have ever sung something out of Ecclesiastes? Probably you should have had more hands up for singing than reading, because you've probably heard a song, because I think most of us are in the generation to know The Birds. It was probably their one wonder hit, a song called Turn, Turn, Turn. For everything there is a season. Ah, yeah, some heads of recognition are bobbing up and down. You're going to get to that in a few weeks. That's Ecclesiastes 3. You've sung this material more than you've ever read it. Why haven't you read it? Because it's rarely preached on. And why is it rarely preached on? Because most of the church wonders why and how the book even made the biblical cut to begin with. There's very little in there, actually, in God language. But I dare say if you read it, you will see how it does point to God. And the challenge that I will have with you is to make some sense out of the material as we go along, because as you break it into parts, you really need to see bigger pictures to understand the book. And who wrote this book? It's attributed to King Solomon, though his name wasn't mentioned, but if you knew the other pieces in the beginning, you got it, because it told you who his father was, told you he was the king of Israel, that his father was David, and that he was wise. You know all three of those things connect you to Solomon. His name will appear later in the book, but in the beginning, you need to just know your biblical history to figure out who they're telling you this teacher is. So what does Solomon want us to know? Well, in the verses Rob's just read to start us off, you're probably thinking there's not much good news in that. And you're probably thinking, if I'm concerned about my legacy, my own personal legacy, what mark am I leaving in the world? It's pretty discouraging. Because the wisdom tells us nobody's going to remember you, much less to the next generation, and maybe not even long after you're gone. So you're toiling under the sun, to use his expression. He'll use that expression throughout the book. You're doing your stuff. You're living your life. Let me fill you in on what he leaves out. Harlan's already laughing. He may know what's coming. So you're going to live your life. You're going to die. Some folks are going to show up at your funeral. They're going to hear some final thoughts about you, hopefully for the most part something positive. Then they're going to leave your service and they're going on home. Either going back to work because they took half a day off to come to your service, or it may be time to go home and spend time with their family, and their life's going to go on. And somebody, probably if you have children, it's going to be your children are going to come in and clean out all your stuff. Those treasures that you held on and hope someday they may want are probably going to end up in the Goodwill box or auctioned off somewhere. They're going to sell your house and your car, and they're going to live off of that money and enjoy the inheritance that you left them. And in a few generations, even your name won't probably much be remembered in the family stories when they gather. You might still be a faint remembrance at some future Thanksgiving meal when somebody says, "Remember good old Joe." And Solomon tells us that's about the way life works. And not just for us, every generation before us, and every generation coming after us. So it makes me raise today's question, if this is really the reality of our situation, what's the point of living? Now, Solomon won't answer the question in chapter 1 and the 11 verses you've heard, but if you stick with me long enough this summer, you'll find, I think, he gives us some answers to the question. So, but I need to stay in the first 11 verses and ask today, what's the point of living? So the sermon kind of got reconfigured several times this week, as often happens. And it got its last reconfiguration yesterday when a group of us attended our Southern California, Nevada annual meeting, or for our conference annual meeting. And we had a gentleman there, a United Methodist pastor, who's made his ministry in the field of coaching. If you want to know more about coaching, talk to me afterwards and I can tell you what he's doing, trying to coach pastors to help congregations look at a new way to focus on what's important. And the premise that he laid out is most of us focus on the what we do, the tasks that are before us. And he said that's often how the church acts, and I'll get to that later, when the real emphasis needs to be on the why. Why do we do what we do? Where can you find the meaning and purpose in life if you're not going to leave this incredible legacy behind that the generations are going to remember you forever? What are you doing that brings meaning and purpose to all of the activity that you do? So we have to start with the what, and each one of you has to figure that out for yourself, but I'll just quickly overwhelm you with my what. So what do I do? Monday morning, I get up and I come here, and I sit at a computer and I create a liturgy for a week and make sure that's done and ready to go for you. And then I start the creative process of working on the next Sunday's sermon, trying to come up with something I'm going to say to you next week, standing here in this place. And then depending on how long that takes, if I get some time, I'll start dealing with a lot of emails that have been accumulating. And luckily, from my perspective, if I get around to it by the end of the day, I get to make some pastoral phone calls, and if I'm really lucky, maybe even a pastoral visit or two. Then Tuesday, I get up in the morning, and I drive out to Santa Clarita, and I spend the day working with people who are facing the end of life, trying to give them some hope for the end. And I get up on Wednesday morning, and I drive up to the Antelope Valley and do that very same thing up there, just different faces and a different territory, but the same conversation. Thursday morning, I get up and do that same thing, but this time, new faces, new places in the East San Fernando Valley. Thursday, I come back here, and that's when I have to deal with the nitty-gritty of the church. Look at things that might need some attention. Somebody might have said, this needs to be fixed or that needs to be done, and I have to figure out how we're going to get that done. I work on sending you out your weekly newsletter so you'll know what's going on in the life of the church. Then I try to spend some time with the creative side, just trying to think forward. And where can we go next and how do we get there? Then Saturday rolls along, and if I'm lucky, I get a little time in the garden to pull some weeds. I have to attend to my chores. I have to somehow get to the grocery store and figure out what we're going to eat in our house for the next week, and that pretty much eats up Saturday. And then Sunday, here I am, just like this. You see me right back here doing what I did last Sunday and what I'm going to do next Sunday. I'm going to give you a blessing when all of this craziness is over, and I'm going to send you out into the world to do your what? All of the activity that will consume your day and your week. And if you just focus on that, it's going to drive you crazy. There are many times that drives me crazy, just doing the what. Some of you are smiling because your what's driving you crazy too. So how do we redeem that? And that's what Solomon doesn't tell us. So this is where Job's going to add his wisdom to this and what I am learning. How do we make some meaning out of that chaos that we call life? These routines that we find ourselves in. Where does the meaning and purpose come from? Well, again, only you can answer that question. But for me, I can share some snippets of where meaning and purpose come. When somebody leaves church on Sunday and stops me and said, you know, this point you made today in your sermon really spoke to me, or it really challenged me, or it really comforted me, or it gave me a new insight, then that's part of the why of what I do to prepare those sermons for you. When I go and make a hospital visit or see someone in a skilled nursing center or someone that I talk to who's facing surgery and I can listen to their fear and their concern about what's going on with them, and they can say, your listening presence and your prayer really brought me some comfort and hope, then that's why I take the time to do that. When I teach a class and somebody says there's some new insight I gained, that's why I do that. When I can sit with someone who's dying and take some of that fear away and help them to get to a place of acceptance and understanding and a sense of peace, then that's why I do what I do. So why do you do what you do? Have you ever given much thought to that? Why do you come and work in a food pantry? Why do you cook a meal and serve homeless families? Why do you go to Two Palms on a Sunday afternoon and run a worship service for 50 people for whom that is church? Why do you go and teach people how to read and speak English when that's not their native tongue? Why do you help people in your business be able to read a caption on a television, because that's how they can communicate? Why do you spend hours a week putting slides together so we can worship with some senses that would not allow us to have those senses touched in worship if it were just black and white ink? Why do you work with lawyers trying to help people who need to be represented? Why do you do what you do? Because that's the point of living. That's where this satisfaction comes. That's where you can take your God-given gifts and abilities and make a difference. I can make a difference today. I can make a difference tomorrow. I can make a difference in this community and in my neighborhood and then in the community out there. But nobody's going to remember that in 100 years, and that's fine. They don't need to. Because in 100 years, hopefully, there'll be somebody else standing here doing their differences in the world to make their world a better place. But why do I do what I do, and why do you do it? Because I hope that there's bubbling up inside of you this desire to do something to make the world you're in right now a better place. And you do that because God has put that bubbling up inside of you. It's going to take Solomon a long time to get there, but he'll eventually get there. But I think he had to ask some tough, cynical questions in order to see what I'm sharing with you now. You do this for the glory of God. The what for this congregation or any church is, yeah, we open up the doors on Sunday morning and we provide a worship service. And we provide Christian education. And we provide opportunities for you to go out and do ministry. But that's not the why. The why is what matters. Just as it matters in your life, it matters in our life. The why is going out there to serve God and to give God the glory and the thanks and the acknowledgement of the blessings and gifts that you and I have individually and together. And it's to go and serve the world with your gifts. To leave your mark. To say, Joe was here for this place and time. And you put your name there. You are here for this place and this time. So go live your life well. And leave a God-given mark behind. That's what's important in life. Amen.